Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the first episode of the Architecture of Wealth, where we give you the tools for well-balanced wealth building. My name is Mark Struthers, your host. I am a chartered financial analyst, a certified financial planner, among other things, as my wife would say. I am also the owner and founder of Sonar Wealth. And some of you might be tuning in looking for a Minnesota Nice Investor Goes to College. We have switched over. So we are using the same channel. Those episodes are still there. And that was started basically out of my love for the topic. I had to deal with a lot of student loan debt. I am a father of two boys, teenagers now. And funding education, planning for education and retirement was a passion. And we actually, I was surprised because it was designed more for those who, more for clients, more for employees on the employee wellness side of the business. I was happy and surprised at how many people actually subscribed and seemed to enjoy the podcast. And many are probably asking, well, why did you stop? Well, I actually started a second podcast because I like talking about other topics like inflation. I like talking about donor advised funds. I like talking about financial and tax planning, estate planning, all the things you need to know to build wealth and hopefully well balanced wealth. Most of our clients are professional families with kids, and they are certainly good examples of those who try to be well balanced. There's not too many of them to say, I want to have $20, $30, $40 million. Some do, but some say I might want to build wealth. Some asset level, but I also want to spend time with my family. I want to be able to coach that basketball game. I want to be able to be around. I want those memories. And so that's what I'm trying for with this new podcast, is for those who want to build well-balanced wealth. We're still going to have a parent focused, but an awful lot of what we talk about is going to be for those who maybe don't have kids or are empty nesters, especially when we get into tax planning or investing or inflation. So when I started to do two podcasts, I just didn't have the time. I have two boys. I have my own business. I have my wife likes to see me once in a while. And also I'm a sandwich generation. I'm a Gen Xer, and I have two elderly parents that are at a time in their life when they need more help. So we decided to relaunch, and due to a number of different things, we had to delay it. So we're off to at least a 2 or 3 month delay, but here we are. So I hope you will subscribe. I hope you will listen in and watch. We started doing more video. We'll still have some guests. The old show, we had college coaches. We had 529 experts. We had financial aid experts. We're going to have guests. We're going to make these shorter. So this one will be a little bit longer because of this intro. We're going to try to keep them for around 10 minutes, but have them more frequently, hopefully at least 2 or 3 times a month. Before, we had some, we tried to keep it 25 minutes, but we had some interviews that went 40, 45. So here we are, our first episode, and we're going to talk about inflation. And I have a little video here. I'm a visual person. Inflation is on everyone's mind. It affects retirement, which is another podcast episode, but it certainly can, healthy inflation can certainly be wonderful, but unhealthy inflation can not be so great as we've had for the last 6-9 months. So today's topic, we're talking about investments that do well during inflationary times. And we're going to have a couple other episodes that goes in deeper, but equities as a whole do better during inflationary times. To get a return above inflation involves risk. Really can't search too far and get a return above inflation without some kind of risk. And when you talk about risk and return over longer periods of time, equities are a great option. They're in a transition now. There's a repricing, which we might have a separate podcast on. Due to that, also the market's afraid of a recession, that inflation is going to cause a recession or stagflation like in the 70s. So we'll probably have a separate podcast on that as to why equities are afraid of inflation, if you will, at least temporarily. But over longer periods of time, there are a few things that give you a better inflation-adjusted return than equities. In that space, value tends to do better than growth for a couple of different reasons. It has to do with the discount rate, has to do with future earnings. Again, we'll talk about that later on because we want to keep these short. These are designed for those who, I had a friend suggest that maybe you should make these like a enough for that a person who's out doing for a brisk walk, like they could do in a 10 to 15 minute time frame, or in my case, running a slow mile. I used to run more, a couple of injuries. I even did a book called Running into Retirement. I was never super fast, but a 4-hour marathon, plus or minus 10 minutes. I loved it. It was a big part of my life for a long time. Starting to get back into it, and I am definitely healthier when I do run. I'm definitely more well balanced. With any of the things we're suggesting today, keep in mind these are for educational purposes only. This is not meant to buy or sell, just as an example. So please consult with your professional before acting. So if we look beyond equities, and again, value tends to do better than growth, just generally speaking. Anyway, again, we'll probably have a separate podcast where we dive in deeper with that. Commodities. So think about real assets. You see it with corn and wheat. When you have inflation, and we'll bring up our little video here, where you have too many dollars chasing too few goods, those goods become more higher priced. And therefore, if you own them, for example, if a lot of people are trying to buy meat or milk, and we've all felt it in the grocery store, at the gas station, those commodities tend to do better. Now, getting exposure to them is a little more nuanced. And please be careful how you do that, especially if you're in the futures market or using futures ETFs or whatever the case may be. But commodities can certainly be a good hedge against inflation. They can also be very volatile. And go just pull up a chart of lumber. You can see it shoot up and then crash back down. And, you know, in lumber, people are demanding more houses. House building goes up. Therefore, the demand for all those things that goes into houses also go up. Real assets such as real estate. So your home has gone up a lot. Rental properties. The ability to charge higher rents has gone up substantially. Now, keep in mind, always be aware of the risks, the return, the profile, possible outcomes. And that's one of the biggest things is people should know what possible outcomes there might be. If you own a rental property and you lose renters, say during COVID, and you still have to pay your mortgage, property taxes, insurance, that could be dangerous for you. Yeah, that's something you don't have if you buy the S&P 500. It might go down in value, but the cost to own an S&P 500 mutual fund or index, and I'm not recommending that mutual fund or index, is a lot lower. You can also borrow for real estate. So real estate borrowing enhances the return. Borrowing around real estate is very attractive because the bank has collateral, and our society is built up around home ownership, around property. So the terms around lending around real estate is very attractive. Some other cons: real estate can be more concentrated. People tend to have rental properties near their homes. Obviously, that city or that area could become depressed. So there's concentration risk there. But I will say for real estate, you do have more control over the outcome. You have no control over what the S&P 500 does. Amazon came out with earnings today. Wonderful company. But they got demolished. This is April 29th. Go out there and check it yourself. Again, these are short-term moves. But you do have control over who you rent to. Maybe if you put in some sweat equity, especially if you enjoy it. Keep in mind, always think about what are you investing, whether it's time or money and so forth, and what's your return. The biggest problem I see with real estate is that it's more of an emotional purchase for folks. Because they can feel it or touch it, they understand it better. They often don't acknowledge the return on investment. They don't acknowledge the time they put in or the risk involved. So ideally, most people should have some level of capital market investments, whether it's stocks and bonds, and then also some real estate. When you talk about real estate investments, those can be a good inflation hedge as well. Think about if the underlying real estate goes up in value, that's good. And for investments where they can adjust the price, think about your rental property. So if it's a year lease and inflation shoots up 9% like it is now, you can raise rents 9%. And what you had found is recently, and you could say it's wrong, but S&P 500 companies and landlords are raising rents far beyond their actual cost. So their profit margin is actually increasing because there's so much demand out there. So not only demand from my perspective, also people are willing to pay it, because when you have this kind of almost inflation fear, people are more accepting of it, where before they might have shopped around more, they might have rejected it. Now people are more accepting of inflation. So I think you see a lot of companies and landlords, I don't want to use taking advantage of it, because it's supply and demand. People are willing to pay it, but they're certainly able to do that. So when you think about these investments, even farmland, think about, can they raise prices? Hotels are a good example. Now, hotels are different because of COVID. And of course, think about malls as well. Malls have gone through a secular shift away from brick and mortar retail to online, whereas property that owned maybe servers or warehouses for online shopping have done better. But when you think about the ability to raise those prices, the ability to adjust, hotels are a good example that second by second, if their costs are increasing or demand's increasing, too many dollars chasing too few goods, they can raise prices by the second. So not recommending any of those things, but just to give you an idea of how you might invest for inflation. Gold is also something that used to be considered an inflation hedge. I find that difficult to swallow. I'm not sure that data is there. 1971, I believe, is we moved away from the gold standard, not really a reserve currency. It's maybe more of a political hedge. You know, again, make sure you put some thought into whether or not gold is still an inflation hedge, especially since you have things like crypto coming along. Crypto certainly has not been an inflation hedge. You know, as we look at inflation over the last 6 to 12 months, crypto has behaved more like a tech stock. So even though it's the idea that it was a currency, I think has kind of gone away, although you see some countries experimenting with it with, we'll say questionable success, but also just as a store of value. And that's part of the problem, even though crypto at its core should be doing really well when you think about devaluing, when countries devaluing currencies. You think about some of these third world countries that if you can decrease friction and cost for people to pay things, it would really be a great thing, and it should be an inflation hedge. The problem is the people trading it, and you're dealing with a kind of a smaller market, so to speak. They're more the folks that trade the NASDAQ. It tends to go up and down with the NASDAQ. So we don't have proof that either gold or crypto are really great inflation hedges. Could crypto be down the line? Absolutely. It could be. Or some basket of crypto, whether it's Bitcoin, you know, whatever the case may be. And again, be cautious how much you put of your liquid portfolio into those assets. But it's just that we don't have enough evidence yet to say that's the case, especially we don't know if there is one that comes out, which one will that be? When you think about gold, we can also think about other metals or even rare earth metals. Those that are used in manufacturing tend to be better hedges, and it makes sense for inflation. Because if you're using silver or copper or lead or whatever, and demand for vehicles, which has been huge, so demand for used cars or new cars, and you're making more of them, well, those metals are going to be more in demand, so they're going to go up. The problem with gold is it's used some in manufacturing, but not a lot, more of jewelry. So it's not to say that it can't go up in value. It's just, please put some thought, gold, speaking of gold, that, you know, is this truly an inflation hedge? Is it a political hedge? It doesn't mean it can't serve a purpose in your portfolio, but the idea that some of the old permanent portfolios, some of the old way of thinking where you had 25% gold, again, I certainly do not recommend that. I'm not sure that's the best use of your assets. I'm not sure how much it's a risk diversifier. Keep in mind, gold does not produce rent. It doesn't produce earnings. It doesn't have an internal rate of return. And if it's not used for manufacturing, it's simply worth what someone's willing to pay for it. You know, and again, that's where some analogies made to crypto. Of course, I think some of that is changing. So I think that's a topic for a separate podcast. So we'll leave it there. Two kinds of fixed income that do perform well in inflation, generally speaking, are TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. They are, and to be careful how you invest in short-term TIPS or long-term TIPS, because the biggest issue, especially with longer dated TIPS, is that most people don't know what to expect from them. So TIPS are always pricing in expected inflation. And if you don't get that, some people might be disappointed, and their excess return often isn't quite what they expect. It's not to say they can't play a role in your portfolio. We're going to have a separate podcast on tips. But things to keep in mind is that tips are good for hedging against unexpected inflation, because every time you buy them, the expected inflation or the break even is baked in. It's a little complicated, but we're trying to keep this under 10 minutes, so we're going to stop there. There'll be another podcast. I bonds are a bit simpler. I bonds are U.S. savings bonds issued by the U.S. government. They have some nuance when it comes to how long you have to own them, how liquid they are, but they're issued with a fixed portion and the inflation portion, which resets every 6 months. The previous 6 months from November through actually right now was 7.12%. Don't quote me on that. And for the next six, it's going to be over nine. So they're wonderful. They have lots of benefits, but you need to know the nuances around them, the features, the restrictions, know the risk return, possible outcomes, and alternatives with any investment you make. We're stopping there. I would love to talk more because I love this stuff. So I hope you'll subscribe. I hope you'll keep joining with us. For those of you that are parents looking for Minnesota Nice Investor Goes to College, believe me, we're going to have a lot of stuff on college funding and planning and admissions and everything as well. So stay well, everyone. Thank you.